Hello, welcome, and thanks for checking in today to No Vacancy, the podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Palmer. I'm an Airbnb ambassador and 17-time super host, and I've hosted over 1,000 reservations. I'm a stay-at-home mom of two and manage my 8 listings remotely. My mission is to help new and experienced vacation rental hosts turn their listings into fully booked, profitable properties that can be managed from anywhere, so you too can have no vacancies. If that sounds good to you, let's get right into the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of No Vacancy, the podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Palmer, and today I have on the one and only Dr. Rachel Gainsborough from Short Term Gems. If any of you attended Level Up Your Listing Summit last year, you will remember her as having such a good quality talk on midterm rentals and luxury investing. I think that your speech, honestly, Dr. Rachel, was one of my favorites. You just gave such good, tangible action points, and that's why I wanted to give a little breathing room between having you as a speaker there and having you on the podcast, because you gave so many takeaways that people had a lot to go work on after hearing you speak. But now let's revisit your topics, and I want to hear you introduce yourself in your own words, and then we're going to talk a little bit about midterms, how you service the healthcare industry. I know that doctors have a lot of unique investing needs, and if we can, we'll touch on luxury investing and luxury rentals as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Natalie. It's such a pleasure to be here and absolutely loved the event, Game Changer. Just such a safe space that you curated for the community. And I thank you so much for putting together this podcast. All the effort that you're putting in there for the community is just, you are seen, girl. And I'm so, so grateful for you.
Thank you.
But a little bit about me. I'm originally from Haiti, was raised in the inner city of Miami. And I just really wanted to take the world by storm and make a huge difference immediately after graduating from grad school. But sadly, that came with a crippling amount of student loan debt, like nearly $500,000. Between my husband and I. And so my path with financial literacy actually started with trying to figure out the student loan debt situation, how to get out of it. And along the way, I tapped into the Dave Ramsey community, and then I tapped into the Bigger Pockets community. And I realized quickly that by taking off my Dave Ramsey hat and putting on the Bigger Pockets hat, I was able to not only impact our debt, but we started to make massive traction with our net worth. Contrary to popular belief, those who are higher income earners or in medicine, they don't have the best financial literacy background. Mm-hmm. This is something that I don't think a lot of people recognize. And we're inundated by a lot of information. We're targets by a lot of financial institutions. So at the end of the day, it's like, okay, we have our expertise in healthcare, but all of the other, you know, I guess pillars or categories that are very important to live a sustainable life just kind of goes by the wayside. So I felt like I had to go back to school, so to speak, to understand and learn this real estate side of the coin. And that's what I did. So launched my very first luxury short-term rental. And what's great about luxury is it doesn't necessarily have to break the bank, because we're in hospitality. After all, it's not just the asset that matters. I really got into, you know, the numbers. I understood how to evaluate markets. And that really changed the trajectory of my life. It was able to help me to pinpoint areas where I knew my dollars could stretch even further than if I were to attempt another strategy like long-term rental or multifamily syndication, which is something a lot of us docs, we like to go into because it's passive, right? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, did that. We expanded our portfolio. I truly believe you only need two high-performing properties to be wildly profitable and to really change the trajectory of your life, your work schedule. If you're looking to work 3 days a week or 3 days a month, two well-positioned properties can get you there. And so that's what I do. I get to teach my fellow docs, and I love to help women. I'm on a mission to helping women because we juggle so many of the balls. And so I believe having, if you imagine having two rentals, just bringing in that revenue, and you have automated your systems and you're listening to Natalie share all the knowledge to take a little bit of that lift off of your business, it just makes a huge difference. So as a woman, a mom of two boys and a wife and I would call myself a healthcare dropout, so to speak. That's what I get to do. I just get to speak and share with others these strategies and how to position yourself to get back not only the financial freedom that a lot of us so crave, but the time freedom, the location freedom, all the freedoms, right?
So your journey is really interesting because doctors, right, are comfortable taking on student loan debt and taking out a ton of debt for school. And then as soon as you graduated, it seems like you realized, how am I going to pay this off? You found your way into Dave Ramsey's community, which is very like no debt, eliminate it as soon as possible. And then you found your way into bigger pockets, which is like, hey, debt is a good thing if you use it right. So can you kind of explain like the thought process there? Was this like straight out of the gate? It like when you discovered bigger pockets, it made sense. Like you had already taken debt out for school. That was an investment. Did this make sense? Did you have to convince your husband to get you guys like on the same track? And then also, how did you purchase a luxury rental with such a high debt to income ratio from your student loans?
Yeah, so we started to make some traction with the student loan debt. My husband and I, between the two of us, at one point we had five jobs and we were just chipping away. It was pure madness. We started to really chip away at it. And you start to look at the light at the end of the tunnel, right? And you're like, okay, this is going to be great. We're fighting for our lives to get a net worth of zero. And we're supposed to be really.
And what's crazy is the light at the end of the tunnel should have been being a doctor, right? Like finishing medical school and residency. That was supposed to be the light at the end of the tunnel. And then you get there and you're like, now we have to work five jobs between two of us.
Yeah.
And there's a new light at the end of the tunnel. Like it's just, you're just climbing out for 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that was the disconnect. And I think that we had upon graduation, we thought we're going to be making it big, but with taxes, with living expenses,
insurance,
first of all, with residency, right? Residency, you're going to pay $30,000 a year, you know, like, oh my goodness. And the debt was there. It was just there. And we just kept putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. But when we finally looked at the debt in the face, it was like, oh, okay, so our student loan debt exceeds our mortgage, our vehicles, our living expenses. And it was like, oh my gosh. And so how do we overcome that? I don't recommend working five jobs, you know, but it's where we started. And like I said, we started to make some traction, but I realized all of that fighting was to get to, you know, a net worth of zero. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going out like this. I'm not working this hard to get this net worth. And so we used our income, our work history to purchase that first property. And thankfully, a great location. It wasn't overly expensive at all, which was great. It was actually $290,000. And at that time, we were able to put a 5% down payment, which was fantastic. And that's what we did. We started off there and we were in the positive from 30 days into that rental. And so that rental was able to add income directly into our household. And it really flipped the switch for us because I remember working one of the night shifts. It was seven on, seven off. And I saw a quote from Warren Buffett that said, if you don't find a way to make money while you sleep, you will work until you die. And I had to ask myself, okay, in order for me to make money, am I going to keep punching a clock? Mm-hmm. Do I now have to work six jobs or seven jobs? Because that's the only way to generate revenue. And that's what we were taught. Like I grew up thinking, you know, you work hard, you work harder. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so real estate was the paradigm shift for me. It was like, oh my gosh, you can't unsee what you see when it comes to real estate.
So my experience with talking to a lot of hosts is that the first property kind of seems to be an accident for a lot of us. And then you find out the numbers are good and it's like, okay, I can scale this thing and make more. What was that journey like for you? Was that first property, did you run the full analysis and you knew like, this is our ticket to make money and get us out of this situation? Or was it like, hey, we want to try real estate and you were surprised by the numbers? Like, what was that experience like?
I ran the numbers.
Okay.
I ran the numbers, Natalie. And for those of you who are multitasking, come back to me, like Amy says, right? Come back to me. I ran the numbers for 2 years. That's how much analysis paralysis. That's another thing about medical professionals. We have a ton of analysis paralysis. That's how much analysis paralysis I was combating. I ran the numbers for 2 years.
Wow.
I knew the markets. I knew the property size, 4-bedroom versus 5-bedroom, down that granularity. I ran the numbers for years. And then I pulled the trigger.
Why? Was it that you found the perfect deal, or was there a mindset shift that made you feel like you needed to get out of your own way and do it, or both?
It was actually an experience. So I was a part of a lot of real estate investment associations, just consuming content, consuming, running numbers. I dream in spreadsheets. That's something you may not know about me. I dream in spreadsheet formulas. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, I've got the formula for that, which is weird. I used to tutor calculus. So when I say I ran the numbers.
I feel like there's a joke there. Like while you're laying in your bed sheets, you're dreaming of spreadsheets. There's something.
That's a good one. Yeah, good one. I didn't think of that. Yeah, we gotta do something with it. That's a good one. Math dad jokes. Yeah. So, but a deal came across our email. I forget how, but it was a wholesaler who said, hey, there's this property in Alabama that's for sale. And we're in Georgia. So like 3 hours away. And the way the sun was glistening on the side of the property, I was like, oh, this is going to be so perfect. And it was kind of this weird green color, but that's okay. We can paint. We're good. We read all the books. We know how to do all of the minor things. And so we're driving out there because dreaming. My husband and I were dreaming, oh my gosh, this property is going to be everything. And it was only $17,000. Only $17,000. And we get there.
Oh God, I'm nervous.
$17,000. We get there. And as we're getting closer, I was like, okay, I'm back in the hood in Miami. I feel like, okay, what's happening? Like, I'm about to get shot. This is not really a vibe. I've worked so hard to get out of the hood. Now I'm back in the hood. So we're driving closer and closer now as we get to the property. And it looks like the property is being held together with caulking dripping from all sides of the property. The roof is caving in.
The pictures that your agent had like sent you before or something?
I could see relics of the property in the pictures.
This is why you always go see a property in person, okay, before you put an offer.
Let me tell you, it was the property back in its heyday, probably 20 years ago. And you get there and it's falling apart. My husband's getting out the car to go and knock on the door. I'm like, get back in the car, because I'm the investor. I'm like, let's go, run. We head back, and that was the moment I knew I'm not going to be a part of the We Buy Ugly Houses crowd. Mm-hmm. No dig on them. That is not our skill set. We're not renovators. We're not wholesalers. We're going to be the We Buy Pretty Houses MLS people. Mm-hmm. And that next day, the property came on the market and we put in an offer. And the asking price was $290. We told them we would give them $290 because it was a market we were intimately familiar with. I can jog to the property. And, the market value in that location at the time in 2018 was like $350,000. Mm-hmm. And so the seller, unfortunately, had passed away, but the trustee was his family member, his son, I think, who was out of state. It's like $290,000. Everyone was asking for contingencies. We say, we'll take it as is.
I'm really glad you shared that, because I think where I was thinking was like, knowing that you had all the debt from your student loans, it must have been so hard to commit to taking on like a higher priced property. Like I would have assumed that you'd be part of the We Buy Ugly Houses club, but you found that and it was just like, this isn't jiving with us. Like this doesn't click. This isn't in alignment. This isn't what we want to do. And you immediately pivoted. So that was kind of your breakout into luxury.
Yeah, absolutely. And Natalie, here's where I think the biggest disconnect for me was. At the end of the day, I was looking at our bank account, right? So if I were to purchase a $17,000 property, that's out of pocket, $17,000 cash. Now I need a hard money loan for all the renovations. Now I need the time capital, the management skills to chase down contractors, all of that. Or I can use leverage to the umpteenth degree, okay? For a $290,000 home, I'm out $11,000. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I'm like, it sounds like more, it's $290,000 purchase price, but it's less. in my piggy bank, you know, and right here, right now.
Profitable within 30 days, yes. You said. And yes. All the time you would have spent getting the other place ready.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anyone's talking about that. Let's mm-hmm. talk about that for a second. And so I think it's important for the audience to not just follow all of the advice from all of the real estate gurus, just figure out where you are and what is the right capacity for you. I bet you there are people on here who are contractors themselves. Yes, that would have been an ideal situation yeah. for them, right? But for me, we barely paint straight, right? So get back into the house, get your butt to work, generate some more money, use that work history, and get another property.
So after you got into the $290,000 house, you were making money within 30 days on this one. How long yeah. was it before you scaled up to another property?
Within, I want to say 4 months, we got a $310,000.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then within that year, we got a $462,000.
So that's three the one that properties we within a year. And was yeah. there, you know, you got into this to get yourself to that net worth zero, yeah. $0 net worth. So was there a point where it was like, okay, now that we have this money coming in, let's just pay off our student loans and pay off this house. Like, we just want to finally be at that zero mark. Like, what made you so comfortable being like, no, next one, like, let's take on even more debt?
Yeah, I just saw the numbers and I knew that eventually the real estate, if I set it up correctly, set up my SOPs, my systems, my processes, I could fire myself from healthcare if I so chose, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was going through a lot of burnout at the time. And my goal was to continue to build our portfolio so that we can not only replace our jobs, so that we can make the W-2 optional, but to generate revenue. And surpass that net worth zero. So by the third property, the net worth had gone to far beyond zero, mm-hmm. thankfully, mm-hmm. because property values of $462,000 was valued at $800,000 within a year. So, I mean, you can't unsee these yeah. things, right? Real estate in the right market with the right appreciation, it's really a game changer. And we wanted more. And we wanted more.
So I know today that you teach, and you already talked about it, that really one or two properties can change your yeah. life. So when you got to these three, what happened from there? Did you want to keep scaling, or was there a thought of like, let's just hone in and get these SOPs perfect on what we're doing? Like, what does your portfolio look like today?
So today we have continued to scale. We're at about, I want to say 17 to 19 Woo! Because we have we've grown. We have some that are under construction and we've swapped out a few and we're under escrow on one. So just around there. But from there, honestly, the opportunities came to us without us necessarily seeking after them. So for instance, we're a part of a mastermind. That's why it's good to have the connections and to attend Level Up Your Listing Summit. You never know who's in the room mm-hmm. that you can partner with. And there was a gal that I was able to partner with on properties that range, I want to say, from around $175,000 to $350,000. And we took, $1,000. And we took down a portfolio that of 8 or 9 properties that generated multiple six figures per month in the Poconos region, which is amazing, right? But that's not something that I really went looking for per se. I knew that market was fantastic because it has over 1 billion tourists every year. And the home prices were fantastic at the time. So yeah, that's one of the opportunities there that we took down. So that vastly changed our portfolio. And every single deal thereafter has been quite, kind of unique and interesting and weird. I get deals coming into my inbox, you know, to this day, which has been great. So I evaluate them. I run them against my spreadsheets that I dream about. And if the math is mathing, the math is mathing. It mm-hmm. works, because at the end of the day, I'm not at the, you know, I've got 2 kiddos that I want to put to college. So I'm not at the place in my life where I can say, oh, I just really like it because it's cute. Mm-hmm. That's not me right now. I can see that being me in the later years, but that's not me right now, you know? And so we're just reevaluating every time. So every year we look at all the properties and we look at which ones are doing well, which ones are the troublemakers. I'm not looking to expand to, you know, 100 properties I'm more than content with where we are. And we've actually whittled down a little bit and we'll continue to whittle down and use different tax strategies like 1031 exchange to get newer, bigger, better properties. So we'll swap out one or two to get a better property that we never would have dreamed of, Natalie. I'm like, now I'm talking multi-million dollar property that we just never would have dreamed of. But you can do that with these tax benefits.
So can you talk to us about how you break into the luxury market? I know that you started with that $290,000 home that was considered luxury at the time, but the bar has been raised in the last few years for sure. So how does somebody break into luxury now?
Yeah, so I think I just hinted at it. The way we are continuing to grow our portfolio and shift more towards the luxury property type is using swapping out our older properties and using those proceeds, because the margins on those properties have been massive. So if someone has an older property or long-term rental that they're looking at, you know what? I've had this for years and years and years. Well, if you sell it, and you get a really nice profit from it, don't take that profit, okay? Use what's called a qualified intermediary, and you can get into a bigger and better home and using that profit as your down payment for that property, but definitely run your numbers. Now, to date, I will say that our purchase price hasn't been above $600,000 because we're still very conservative. So for me, it's not necessarily going out there and buying these $1 million properties. Okay. I know if my students are listening to me, you already know.
How do you define a luxury property? Because I think a lot of people just think $2 million beachfront, like that, you know, or a penthouse somewhere. Like, what is Dr. Rachel's definition of luxury? How do you serve that market?
Yeah, that's a great question, Natalie. So when it comes to modern luxury accommodations and modern luxury travel, it's very different from like luxury real estate. Luxury real estate, you're right, it's like those $2 million properties. Mm-mm. Modern luxury accommodations and modern luxury travel as it relates to short-term, mid-term rentals, it's all about like, show me the money. How much money can I make per night based on the things that I am adding to the property? What are the services? What are the products? Like, how am I setting up this property so that it shines and it remains in the top 1-2% in that particular market? And it could be something as simple as adding cornhole, putt-putt, fire pit, hot tub, barrel sauna in the backyard, right? Mm-hmm. Creating a vibe is where you'll get your biggest bang for your buck, because you can take a C-plus property and turn it into a bachelorette pad that everyone's like ranting and raving over because you created a vibe. You know, the wallpaper, the feature wall, all the things that we know to do as short-term rental hosts is how you're able to do that. And then you step it up with what I call it, my three C's. It's your guest communication, right? That elevated level of communication, understanding why they're visiting, the connection that they're able to have with the party that they're visiting with. Have you thought through who's visiting, why they're visiting, and is the house set up in a way that they connect with one another? Their connection with nature, the outdoors are still very much so a part of the scene of the property. So reconnect with nature and then reconnect with or connect with the actual local area that they're visiting. Are there little touches that are very unique to the property so that they can live like and feel like they're living like a local, they're understanding what space it is they're visiting. And so those are two of the three C's. And then finally, one of the most luxurious feelings that you can have when you visit a space is convenience. How convenient was it as they're checking in, checking out? What was that like, right? So making things as easy as possible, as seamless as possible for them. Those are the attributes of a luxury stay. And as far as tactically, you know, there are definitely things that we place in our luxury properties. So our beach house has 5 bedrooms, but 4 of which are king size bed suites and 1 big old bunk room and then the gaming area, right? These are things that, can be a little pricey to put together, but the king size bed is the default luxury bed.
Right.
Natural fiber linens, you know, cotton, we like cotton. It doesn't dry as fast, but at the same time, it is a natural fiber linen. you know, there are a few things, a super fast Wi-Fi. And you want to look at making sure that you have that, because nothing is more lacking in luxury as feeling like you're on dial-up, unless the experience is that you're off the grid. So those are some of the things, Natalie, and it doesn't have to break the bank. So thank you for asking that question, because I want to debunk the myth that luxury has to be multi-million. I've been in multi-million dollar homes and it's like, ooh, what in the world?
Right? I know some of them are just gaudy and ugly, and they put stupid finishes that aren't even comfortable. They're like picking, you know, weird, funky furniture pieces over, you know, just based on the aesthetic instead of comfort. Right. That's not luxury to me. Like, I would not enjoy my time staying somewhere like that. Right. Yeah, I like what you touched on. Like, I would never think of cornhole as a luxury amenity. Right. But if that's creating an experience that's like fun and memorable and serves the audience, like that too, the right person is luxury. It really is, you know, and just, yeah, having the king size bed, like you're already at least committed to buying a queen size. How much more is it to just add the king and check off that you have luxury bedding in the property? So you're right. This doesn't have to break the bank at all. What's like your budget going into a property to outfit it as what you would define a luxury property?
It depends. So if I'm looking at a suburban property versus a destination location, it varies. So in my destination locations, you're going to add more. I've got a ton of beach towels. I'm going to get some golf carts. All of that is factored into the budget. But for a suburban property, let's say we're looking at a 3-bedroom. To outfit something like that, I work with wholesalers, guys, so don't come for me. I would say about $20,000.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually get better pricing than that. And then for, say, my
news host GPO, you guys, one of the sponsors of the show.
There you go. Host GPO is amazing. Mm-hmm. Tell Jen we sent you.
One thing I am absolutely craving for 2024 is simplicity. But we all know that the setup process for a new short-term rental is anything but simple. That is why I'm so excited to tell you about HostGPO. By shopping with HostGPO, you can save up to 75% on furniture, decor, linens, amenities, and supplies. And they only work with a few select brands that are tried and tested to stand up to the wear and tear of guests. With HostGPO, there is no overwhelm of comparing hundreds of brands, variations, and product reviews. You just shop for what you need and rest assured that you are getting the best quality at the best price. Over 300,000 properties are already purchasing through HostGPO, and as the pool of customers grows, so do the discounts that HostGPO can negotiate for us hosts. By signing up through my link in the show notes below, you'll get an exclusive 3 months of free access to start shopping on HostGPO today. Thank you so much to HostGPO for sponsoring the show and for making it so simple to set up and restock our STRs. For a 3-bedroom in a suburban market, so we're talking what, 2,000 to 2,500 square feet maybe for that? $20,000, that's not bad at all. And if you can go through a wholesaler or sign up for like a designer discount, you can get that even cheaper.
Yeah, for sure. So not too bad. And so beach property, it would be more probably 35 to 40,000.
Okay. Totally fair. I want to ask how you are, because I know another like niche that you've really specialized in is midterm rentals. How are you bridging luxury with midterm? Because when I think luxury in the short-term rental space and, you know, the barrel sauna and the murals and the bachelorette party pad, it just screams short-term rental to me. How are you getting people who can stay 30 nights to pay that top dollar, right? You can justify it for a weekend getaway, but it's harder when you're doing midterm rental stays. So how are you combining these two niches?
I love the way you ask the question, Natalie, because when you say, how are you getting people to justify? And that is the secret. I'm not getting people to pay me, because people like you and me, we're like, the math is not mathing, right? But we're getting corporations. That's the difference. So corporations, their pockets are deeper. So our strategy specifically focuses on those who are displaced from their homes due to a disaster. Say it's a natural disaster, such as hailstorms, wildfires, or lightning strikes that turns into a fire, or say it's an accidental disaster. For instance, the kids set the house on fire. I'm like, I don't want to say it out loud for those who have the kids listening, or a water pipe that burst, right? Because it's a little bit of an older home. And so if those people are in homes that are deemed to be uninhabitable, and say it's a 3, 4, 5 bedroom home, where do they stay while their property is being renovated? Well, they may stay in a hotel for a day or two, but they need more of a long-term solution, because I don't know if you work with contractors lately, Natalie, but it's taken them forever.
Yeah, that 6-month timeline you got is more likely, what, 9 to 12 months?
Literally. So we had a guest stay with us for 13 months. They start off with a 1 to 2 month. Like, we might extend it to 2 months. I said, oh, you said a fire? I blocked my calendar.
Like,
for
honey, we know you're going to be here a good long while. Get comfortable. Right,
get comfortable. Get the casserole dish and let's go.
Get a turkey baster. You're going to be here through Thanksgiving. We already know.
We already know. And they, truth being told, they stayed with us for 13 months.
Tragic.
At month 4, I checked. I was like, Mr. So-and-so, because he's a high school teacher. This is a family in our community. Mr. So-and-so, how's this going? He goes, would you believe they never pulled the permits? We fired them. We're starting from scratch. Music to my ears. But
like, right, I'm so sorry about this situation.
I am so
sorry.
Babe,
should we go buy another property now?
Right. Let's go buy another property. We wanted to go to the Canary Islands in Europe. Let's go ahead and do that, because, you know, it's locked in.
And he's not paying. This high school teacher didn't have to pay any of this. This was all covered through insurance.
Through insurance. And they pay in paper checks. The insurance cuts the checks and send it to us. We get it in a FedEx envelope. I'm like, ding, 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 ding.
There's no tenant that's going to default on you or just start missing payments or anything like that.
No.
Amazing.
No, and it's not an eviction. I know a lot of people are like, well, what about tenants' rights? The person has a newly renovated home.
They want to get back home.
They want to get back home. They want to get back home so bad to get back to their normal lives. So I understand, again, you hear a lot of the gurus out there saying never rent your house for greater than 30 days because you're going to have problems with evictions and things like that. And it is all well-meaning advice, but does it really matter if your tenant is someone who's trying to get back home, or in the in-between time, we ended up hosting the executive director of The Walking Dead. If she wants to squat, listen, she could squat all she wants. And it was a she. So I was super excited about that. But yeah, you know, so we're not really dealing with that situation, but I'm sensitive to that. Yes. Be mindful of who the avatar is to protect yourself, but yeah.
Can I ask, I know you said that the corporation or the insurance company will have deeper pockets than the average person so they can afford what you're charging. But why, could you still explain why like an insurance company would choose to send the tenant to a luxury listing if there is one that's, you know, baseline is covered, it's down the block, they're charging half the rate because it's not technically luxury. There's no hot tub. There's no treadmill there. There's no king size bed, but it does the job. It'll get the boxes checked off. Why would they still decide to go with a luxury option?
So let me give a couple of scenarios. I think examples really can help hit the nail on the head. So one of our guests, they were coming from an 11 bedroom house.
Wow.
Okay. An 11 bedroom house. So when
that was their primary residence.
That's their primary residence.
Okay.
That completely, they said they heard something coming from the fridge. They moved the fridge and they say like an ocean. It felt like an ocean was coming. And so, yeah, 11 bedroom home. And you don't put that guest in a so-so house. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My house, the biggest property we had in this particular market, was a 6-bedroom home. It was the only thing that remotely was close to their standard of living. So it would behoove the insurance company to keep that guest in their current standard of living, because here's the deal. Now you have a medical bill you need to contend with, because mom is stressed out. She's not used to living this way, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to keep them in their standard of living. And the second thing is, we all have an allowance inside of our homeowners insurance. That's protection if we can't live in our home. And that allowance is a percentage of our property value or of the structure's value. So my house was even priced to where it could be for an 11 bedroom home. It was priced for those who were coming out of a 6 bedroom home. So at the end of the day, if I get pushback, I said, no worries, go ahead and find a hotel or someone else who can accommodate this family. And she said to me, imagine cooking for a family of 10 out of a hotel. Mm-hmm. So although we were at the $21K per month mark, we're the cheapest thing and the most cost-effective thing and the most mentally sound thing for them. They said, we'll take it. The 6-bedroom, it's fine. We're going to make it work. We're just happy for it. How many 11-bedrooms are in your market for rent right now, mm-hmm. fully furnished, waiting for this type of avatar? You're not going to find that.
Mm-hmm. So knowing that this 11-bedroom home was like such a niche experience that their, you know, house flooded and they have to stay with you, this 6-bedroom home, like, how, when they moved out, is it like tough to fill the, you know, after that? Like, was this just a fluke that you guys got super lucky? There was nothing else comparable on the market, so they had to go with you for the $21K a month? Or are you guys just constantly full? Like, explain to us.
No, that's a great question. And so we are constantly full, and it's a cross between two avatars. We actually have the film industry here in Georgia as well.
Right.
So we fill her in between with the film industry and the insurance clientele in that particular property. And so for that particular property, it averages anywhere from $15K to $28K per month. Mortgages.
No 20. Cleanings in between. These are midterm guests.
I'll have a cleaning, one cleaning in every month. I'll do a cleaning make sure the property stays up to par. Yeah, mortgages, I want to say $2,600 a month.
I have said so many times on this podcast that finding a good, reliable cleaner is the single most important thing you can do to ensure a successful STR business. And if anyone has ever dealt with a bad cleaner, you know I'm right about this. Turno is here to solve that problem for us hosts once and for all. With Turno's Cleaner Marketplace, you can find your dream cleaner and have access to a whole network of backup cleaners in case of emergency. Once you find your trusted cleaner, use the Turno app to manage and automate the entire cleaning process, from auto scheduling that gets synced directly to your booking calendar, auto payments, photo checklists, problem reporting, and inventory management. Right now, Turno is offering No Vacancy listeners a $150 Amazon gift card just for trying out Turno's Cleaner Marketplace and completing one clean with them. Just use the link turno.com/novacancy to unlock that offer and stop settling for cleaning quality that you're unhappy with. Again, that is turno.com/novacancy to find your dream cleaner and snag that bonus $150 Amazon gift card. Oh my God. Okay. So can I ask, like, would you, like, next investment, would you guys go bigger than 6 rooms? Like, I guess I'm trying to figure out my brain. I'm a more conservative person, and I feel like I'd be like, 4-bedroom is the amount that I know will book no matter what. I don't know if people are always going to have a need for 6 bedrooms, but you're full all the time. So now are you thinking like, let me find a 7-bedroom, 8-bedroom next? Like, should you buy an 11-bedroom house and be that only option in town? Where are your numbers crunching to figure out that sweet spot of bedroom count?
It's the purchase price for me.
Okay.
So I know anything above $700,000, I don't care what market it's in. I'm like, yeah, $700,000 is the ceiling. And when I started, Natalie, my number was $300,000. I was like, we're not going above $300,000. And it's crept up and up. But $700,000, I'll maybe creep up to $750,000 in our current economic climate. But above that will not pencil out. I haven't seen it consistently pencil out.
Okay.
So for me, it means, you know, I'm probably not going to find an 11-bedroom home.
Okay.
To meet that price point, right? The only other thing I would consider is we had under contract an inn that was 13 bedrooms. You know, we went back and forth, but that's more of a event space type of play. So a whole different asset class for sure. But that's where I would consider something like that, where it's like a legitimate wedding venue inn. I would go that route. But yeah, if I find an 11-bedroom for $500,000,
$600,000. Okay.
Course, I would do it. Yeah.
Okay. So for you, it's purchase price more so. And then whatever like bedroom count you can get within that purchase price, you're going for
it. I like 5+ bedrooms for sure. Because I'm the only one. Like when I go to filter, I love filtering and putting 5+ bedrooms, and it's only my property the way. Yes. Right. And so although our properties are in the $400,000 range, well, the neighborhood over are all $1 million homes. So I call myself the millionaire next door because I'm not paying that, but I'm here to serve that.
How are you getting these insurance clients or film industry clients to stay with you? Are they booking you on Airbnb?
That's a great question. A few of them are, Natalie, and like it or not, Airbnb is the Google of finding temporary housing. Mm-hmm. So you always want to list your property on Airbnb. You want to make sure that it's positioned correctly so that you can attract these guests, but we're also listing on other platforms. Like for instance, in Georgia, there's a few platforms that you could list with the film industry. So whatever is happening in your state, say you're in a location where there's higher education, academia, right? So professors and their housing professors, you want to know during the SAG after strikes, we were impacted by the strikes, the insurance was still cracking. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Homes are, water pipes are bursting. And for whatever reason, a tree has fallen. For whatever reason, lightning struck. And then
that doesn't pause just because, you know, mortgage rates are high or whatever's going on in the world. Yeah.
Exactly. And I just read an article this morning from the property casualty information because I stay up to breast on that because that's our bread and butter in the suburban markets. They're saying that, yeah, because of weather related anomalies, they're seeing more and more and predicting more and more claims in 2024. So I stay on top of that. But yes, to answer your question, Airbnb, Vrbo, you want to list there. There are other platforms too that you want to use. For instance, if you're working with the insurance, there are platforms within the temporary housing agencies that you want to list on directly on their platform, and it's their intranet. And the number one temporary housing agency in North America is named ALE Solutions. And they just have a place where you can list your property. And I just listed there, no photos. You don't get the warm and fuzzy. Oh, look at how cute my property is. No, it goes into, I bet you, a spreadsheet somewhere.
So no pictures. It's literally just a database of like bedroom count, bathroom square footage, address. Yeah. And like check off if you have a kitchen.
Address, check off if you have a few things. Kitchen, are you pet friendly?
Garage, and, maybe.
Yeah, garage. Yeah. And a bunch of check boxes. How much you think you want to, you know, charge, and you list the number there. That's kind of competitive. But once they call you, you charge more because of course your stuff is cuter than everyone else's.
So that makes sense. Cause when you like the $21K price per month, me as a normal person, like I can't wrap my head around who would pay that per month. But I guess like if they just have a spreadsheet on their end, there's no pictures or warm and fuzzies, like you said, but they're like, we have 11 bedrooms, people coming from an 11 bedroom, filter down. This is the only one that's six bedrooms. Like, we don't care the price. They have to go there. Okay. So it's just like purely like spitting out a math formula. So the 5+ bedroom count, like you said, is such a good like security blanket for you. Like that's such a good safety net that no matter what, you're one of the few, if the only one in that market. Like they, if there's a bigger house, they have to put them there. There's no choice.
Yeah. And if your position is, say, you're in a market where you're in a destination market, there's nothing but one bedroom condos. Well, there's not a lot of people.
You have to compete on price.
You got to compete on price. But if you're in a market where there are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 bedroom homes, it's like, oh yeah, let me come in here with my 5-bedroom and see what I can do. Because these folks they're not really leveraging our strategy, right? Mm-hmm. They're just living there. And so you're coming in with a product that can meet their needs. So that's what.
And so your mortgage is $2,500, you said, for that 6-bedroom property. And I bet you the person with the 5-bedroom property, their mortgage is what, maybe $2,400? The 4-bedroom is probably $2,300. The 2-bedroom is maybe around $2,000. Like you're getting just exponentially so much more space in the property for marginally a little bit more on the mortgage. And you are like securing yourself in this bubble where it's like, you have to pick me. You don't have another option.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because a lot of people, they find that, okay, 6-bedroom is going to be so expensive and it's daunting. Even my husband, he was like, okay, you're going to buy a house that's $100 more than the 5-bedroom?
Or $100,000 more.
$100,000, $100 more per month.
Oh, sure.
More, the mortgage more, $100 more per month. And that freaked him out. He's extremely conservative.
Yeah.
He's extremely conservative. But the revenue was night and day. Mm-hmm.
That extra $100 a month is putting you into this higher tier where you are like guaranteed income. Otherwise, maybe you're paying $100 less per month on your mortgage, but you have to come down $5K a month in what you're able to charge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's kind of the mindset that I have is like, how much can I really charge? How much can they really pay? Mm-hmm. And I just kind of, you know, spreadsheet that against, well, how much are the homes in this area? If something were to happen to all of these homes, you know, reverse engineer it. And it shows me what the opportunity is in a market. So that's why it's important for me not to just go out and get a grab bag, a 17K property. It's better for me to just figure out how to wait a little bit to generate the revenue to go and get, you know, something a little bit bigger and a little bit and a lot better so that I can hit the ground running sooner than later.
Okay. Okay. And I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong here, but once you've had ALE Solutions or any of these insurance companies place someone there once, what's the funnel like after that? When those people check out, are you just back in this like regular spreadsheet or do you have a relationship with this insurance agent now? How are you getting repeat guests after that?
Yeah, so I'm in their funnel. I'm in a number of other funnels as well. So I mentioned the number one temporary housing agency, but there are others too that are that intermediary, that third party. There's temporary housing directory. So within 60 days, I have a 60-day notice to vacate clause. And so during that time, if I'm told, yeah, our property is good to go, we're going to be out in 60 days, then I send out an email and I let all of my contacts, all of the ones at ALE, all of the ones at THD, all of the ones at Assured, know, hey, I've got something coming up in 60 days, just giving you a heads up. And it works that way. We also open up the calendar on Airbnb, where we're able to accept maybe two night stays here and there in the really close, tight,
sure,
you know, shorter, tight frame, but we're not accepting two night bookings further out.
Okay. Okay. So it's purely if someone checks out and you've got the next midterm booking in 30 days checking in for 6 months, you'll fill that 30 days with a few little. So you're still getting your short-term rental permit. Like Georgia's pretty strict, aren't they, on short-term rental regulations?
Each city is different. So the city of Atlanta is very strict. They have some new guidelines. We operate in the outskirts right now. I don't have anything in the city of Atlanta. It's just, I can't stand the traffic. So we're on the out on the beaten path a bit. And so we're fine right now. So far, so good.
And from your experience, because we've talked a lot in the short-term rental industry of, you know, cracking down regulation, permits being capped, moratoriums setting in, what are the ordinances usually and regulations surrounding midterm rentals?
There aren't any in the markets that we serve in. So it actually is considered long-term rental in a lot of markets.
Okay. So
because of that, it falls under a whole different asset class. It does not really impact the midterm rental. The only, I would say, rules that I see really impacting midterm rental properties are like HOAs. So if you're in an HOA and there's a length of stay restriction, like, okay, it has to be 6 months. Those are the things that I'm seeing. So if there's an HOA, you still want to look at the CCNR to see how you can operate. But if it's 30 days, 28 days and or more, that's regulated by the state level. And that's typically considered a long-term rental, but I'm not an attorney. So don't come for me again. check all the rules for your location, your municipality, your township, all the things. And yeah, so that's as far as what we know.
If you're anything like me, you got into the short-term rental game looking for passive income. And since then, you've found that managing your listing is anything but passive. Sound familiar? Between messaging guests, managing your calendar, overseeing maintenance, it's a lot to tackle, and Hospitable is here to help. Hospitable saves hosts like you time by taking recurring tasks and guest messaging off your plate. You can automate responses to common questions, schedule messages throughout the booking flow, and even get AI to draft messages for you. You'll also be able to manage your calendar across booking channels from one place and can integrate with third-party tools like smart locks and dynamic pricing. Hospitable is the highest-rated software in the industry with a 4.9 out of 5 rating. Hospitable gives you confidence to automate more of your short-term rental management so you can get more of your valuable time back. Try Hospitable for free with a 14-day trial. And if you use this link, you'll get an additional 25% off for 3 full months. Just head to hospitable.com/novacancy. Again, that's hospitable.com/novacancy to claim your offer. Hospitable. Sleep easy. Host confidently. This is the last question I want to ask you, but after you had been in medical school for all that time and you discovered like the power of real estate and everything, was it hard? I know you're a ex-doctor now. You're still have your doctor title, but you're not practicing medicine anymore. Was it hard to shift that identity at all? I just imagine after all that schooling and the whole reason you got into this was to pay off those loans and, you know, pursue that passion. Like, what was going through your head at that time when you decided to leave and go all in with this?
It was really hard. And I remember actually going through a phase of how am I going to walk away from this? Mm-hmm. Because initially I never thought I would. I did not want to walk away. This is not what you sign up for. You don't go into medicine to quit medicine, right?
I imagine so much of your identity by that point, you met your husband through both being in this field. Like it must have mm-hmm. been, I don't know, just such a shock to the system to like leave that behind. But yeah, just share that experience.
Yeah. So I planned it out. I'm a planner also. So I mapped it. I said, okay, I'm going to.
Oh, you are? You who dream about spreadsheets, you're a planner? I wouldn't have guessed.
Listen. Oh my gosh. It was hilarious. So I was speaking with a therapist and in therapy, shout out to therapy. And we had mapped it. I was going to go to the subway nearby, get me one of those footlong churros. And I was going to cry out, you know, the old Rachel and inhale in the new Rachel. Like we had the process mapped out because we had a year, you know, I had a year to grieve my identity, to grieve the change in my identity. I actually waited a year to even tell my parents, not only is it my identity, it's their identity. I'm the golden child with the doctor. We're immigrants, Natalie. We're immigrants. Okay. Like, don't tell them, you know, oh, I'm out here doing real estate. They're like, what are you doing with the real estate? Are you selling houses? They don't understand it. We're immigrants. Doctor, they understand the whole mm-hmm. community, the churches, everybody know she's the doctor, right? Child, listen. Had it all mapped out. And at that point, you know, my husband, he had retired and he was like, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for?
Oh, and he left first.
Oh, he left first.
Even though this was your idea and he's the more conservative one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. He's all in. He's like head of operations. He left first, which is hilarious, right? So cry out the old Rachel, inhale in the new Rachel. And, you know, it's going to be a cathartic experience. This was in January. We mapped it out by December. The goal was by December, I would have gone through that whole emotional ceremony and by February, I quit. I just rage quit, which I tell people not to do. I rage quit in February.
Wait, so what did that look like? Was it like, I'm not even giving a 2 weeks notice? I'm just bye. Peace out.
I got an email of a new crazy initiative. And I know my fellow docs out there, y'all probably could resonate. Got an email that made no sense. It was more work, less pay, more grind. Just, I was like, you know what? Let this be my 2 weeks notice. And in my role, you're really supposed to give like a 2 months notice, but like, let this be my 2 weeks notice. So I didn't make it the year. In month two, I was out. Mm-hmm. So when you know, you know, and that was the power of, at that point, I didn't realize that work was optional for me, but it was. And I think that's something that's holding us back sometimes because I was juggling all the things. I was like, okay, one more property and then I'll be the woman. No, I was several properties in where I could have walked away, but I just hadn't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you get into the medical space because of a passion for that? Or was it just like you said, you were an immigrant. Yeah. You felt like you had to like achieve, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer. It's like one of the three.
Absolutely. I got in. I don't know. I may need to unpack that with therapy, but I actually, you know, I was in love with it, but it was what I was supposed to do too, Natalie. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I can differentiate the two at this point. I should be able to, but yeah. I'm still like curious about it. I'm like, oh, I wonder how everyone's doing. And
yeah,
but what's the validation is when three of my students are my former bosses. That's telling, right?
Unreal. Yeah. Yeah.
That tells me everything that I needed to know, needed to validate.
I'm sure that it's not like your goal to get every doctor out of medicine.
No.
Is there some like, you know, just in like some fulfilling thing when you know that you've, I guess not like, I don't want to say like rescued someone from healthcare. Like a lot of people go into it because it's a true, true passion. But for the ones who find it's not fulfilling and they are just trading hours for dollars and climbing their way out of debt, like, is it just so rewarding to know you've given someone the option where it's optional for them to stay?
My goal, Natalie, is to build a community, a network where we can help doctors to heal the healthcare system. Our healthcare system is so broken, but our heads are down because we're so burnt out. We can't speak up. We have to work these crazy shifts. We have to. And my goal is, you know, if I'm going to be radically clear, I want to build a wellness retreat where I can take these broken down, beaten down docs, take them, you know, feeling that way and rejuvenating them with wellness and practices and financial wellness strategies so that they can go back to healthcare and say, no, we're working 20 hours a week, 18 hours a week, which is more sustainable. No, we're not going to prescribe this medication because Big Pharma wants it. We're going to prescribe this medication because this makes more sense. Having the options, that's my goal, is for healthcare professionals to go back and heal healthcare.
That is so beautiful. I didn't know we were going to get that as a closing statement, but I have to end this here. That can't be topped. That was so beautiful. Well, well said, Rachel. This was such a pleasure. I just always love talking to you. I will say you're the first person I ever heard in this entire industry talk about how one or two properties is enough to change your life. And that was just radical for me to hear. At the time when you were preaching that, everybody else was talking about like how to get to 100 units. And I was so intimidated by that. And I've just, I don't know, admired you so much that your path is just so like achievable and sustainable and just, you know, I don't know, fits better with the soul, I really feel like. So thank you for everything you do. I know that you're absolutely inspiring people and changing lives. I love this conversation. Where can people connect with you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, I have a free gift for the audience. So if you want one of my spreadsheets on my top cities of where to invest, if you go to 75gems.com, you can grab it there and that'll put you into our community, our free Facebook groups and our network and all of that.
Perfect. We will link that in the show notes. And then on Instagram and Facebook, where can we find you?
I'm at short-term gems on Instagram. That's short.term.gems. I don't know why I did the dots, but I did on Instagram and on Facebook.
Thank you, Dr. Rachel. It was such a pleasure, and I'm so excited to see you in a few days in Nashville.
Yay! Can't wait.
And finally, for this week's Am I the Airbnb Hole? We've got some screenshots of a encounter between a guest and host, and this guest seems to be wanting a refund, a partial refund, for not using some of the beds in the property. All right, so let's read this. Hi, after you inspected the place and realized that we didn't touch any of the beds and the kids stayed in the living room, I would like a partial refund, please, and we'll leave a really nice review. Host says, good morning, Jenny. We hope you enjoyed your stay. Thank you again for choosing to stay with us. It is against Airbnb policy to bribe for reviews. We will not be processing any refunds. Please respond to the request for money that we sent yesterday. Thank you. Guest replies, oh, I can't wait to put in a review! !! You really don't have no comprehension. You really don't have no comprehension. Okay, honey. No, we are not playing that game. It sounds like, based on the host's message saying, please respond to the request for money we sent yesterday, it sounds like they probably, when these people checked out, found a bigger mess or something, trash left behind or something that they're charging them for. And I think that that is what prompted this guest to reach out in the first place and ask for the partial refund for not using the beds. No. Okay. This is not like, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. Let's think about this concept in a hotel room, okay? What is typically more expensive? A room with two queens or a room with a king? The room with the king. But by this logic, we should be discounting the rooms with king size beds because there's only one bed instead of two, right? So an extra bed is not getting used. Like, what is this logic that this girl is coming up with? We are not doing this. Somebody brought up a very good point in the comments as well and said, ew, why did her kids sleep on the couch? Like, the whole point of bed sheets is that we can wash the bedding and change it out for the next guest. Like, why are your kids, after skiing all day, playing in the snow, running around, doing whatever they're doing on vacation, why are they just sleeping on the couch? Where's the bedding? Huh? Like, she's trying to make it like, oh, see, we left it so much cleaner because we didn't use the bed. No, the whole point of the bed and the bed sheets is that we can launder these. Please do not sleep with your bodily fluids and sweat on my couch that I can't clean between every reservation. Girl, no. Respond to the original request. You are in the wrong. I don't even know what you did or what you got charged for, but just based on your attitude, I can tell you're in the wrong. Please just go respond to that. Let's not pull this stunt of wanting a refund for not using a bed. Okay? Goodbye, honey. You are the Airbnb hole.
And with that, it is now checkout time. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Lastly, as Airbnb hosts, we all can appreciate a good 5-star review. So you already know a great review on this podcast would mean so much to me. Please subscribe, review, share, and connect with me in the show notes below. Bye!